This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 5:07. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. So last week, tennis player Naomi Osaka dropped out of the French Open and cited mental health reasons for her as her reason for leaving the tournament.
Yeah. So this actually, it kind of was a steady scaling up of things, right? So it began when she initially said that she was not going to do the post-match press conferences, which in and of itself created a bit of a storm. You had the organizers of the French Open saying that, well, you know, that's simply unacceptable, that that's just a part of what it means to be an athlete at these tournaments. She also knew from the very beginning that she was going to be fined and said that she hoped that it would go to good causes. However, what actually came through was that she was fined and threatened with sanctions. So $15,000 for skipping her mandatory news conference after her first round win. And essentially, if she continued to not speak to the media, she would face harsher and harsher punishments. And ultimately, she decided that, you know what, I'm somebody who has gone through, in her words, long bouts of depression, and I need to take care of myself. So she pulled out of the Open.
And I think just to contextualize this within the sport and what it might mean for her career, so she has also pulled out of next week's Berlin WTA 5000 grass court tournament. And that reflects some amount of uncertainty about whether she'll be able to compete at Wimbledon. So just wanted to point out that this isn't an easy choice. It isn't a choice that any athlete would make lightly. But that brings us back to the question of why she did it in the first place, right? So in her statement, she said that her withdrawal would be the best thing for the tournament and for other players, as well as her own well-being. And she also reiterated that she wanted the focus to be on the sport, on tennis. She said, "I never wanted to be a distraction, and I accept that my timing was not ideal. The message could have been clearer." And I think this comes in the wake of the kind of backlash that she actually got when that announcement first went out. People talking about how, well, all of this is part of, the game, really. It's part of your obligation as an athlete. But in a larger sense, I think it brings up questions of why we have expectations like these of athletes in the first place.
And whether they're outdated. So I think the thing about the press conferences and the reason why they've become so expected, so integrated, is because sports isn't just about sports, right? Sports, when it is broadcast, comes with a whole host of things. And it is those extra things that ultimately make broadcasters and advertisers their money. The fact that tennis players put on their watches to receive their trophies or to sit in the post-match press conference. The fact that that 15 to 20 minutes is yet another, I suppose in some ways, a product, right? That these channels can then go on to say, look, we have an exclusive, or look at what we have. And for the longest time, this has just been accepted as part of the game. However, I think that a few things do affect that, like whether or not a person can make an individual choice to not do that, what that might mean, and why it is that the reaction has been almost as if she is stymieing the freedom of press, when I don't think that that's what this is at all. The other thing to consider is also her social media following. The fact that she is a young, popular, very successful athlete who therefore, you know, can just reach out to her audience and can, in fact, fulfill her sponsorship obligations through social media in a time that works for her, in a space that she can control. And it does make it seem as if the press conferences, I don't know, as if the kerfuffle behind it is more to do with her denying access than anything else.
And whether that access or that quote-unquote right of the media should come at the expense of someone's mental health, right? Mm. Because I think especially when someone is so open and talks about this being for her own mental well-being, it does feel a little bit unfair to then throw, oh, well, but this is freedom of the media. And as you rightfully pointed out, a mode that almost doesn't seem very necessary. Are these press conferences actually serving a purpose? Do we need any more access to her than we already have? So all of these are questions that come up. And I think to me, the main thing is also Naomi Osaka is someone that if you look back to how she first, her first big spotlight moment, which was the US Open, and the kind of crazy media spotlight that happened because of her match with Serena Williams, I think we can look back and see that you can see that this hasn't been necessarily the easiest journey for her. And it feels a little unfair when someone isn't allowed to say, well, this isn't an obligation that I can fulfill.
Yes. And whether or not that has any bearing whatsoever on her abilities, you know, because ultimately what you get, therefore, is one of the top seeds not playing in one of the major opens in tennis because they couldn't work out they couldn't work it out, right, fundamentally. And just to say that we are going to be talking about this more from the point of view of how the press has played a role, but in terms of mental health, our colleagues on The Bigger Picture actually covered this earlier today on Live and Learn in a podcast titled Naomi Osaka Prioritized Her Mental Health Over Work, Can We? So in some ways asking that question, right, about what it means to work and what the questions that are placed, the burdens that can be placed on your mental health, where's that balance? And they did that with Yvonne Fu, clinical psychologist. So if you're interested in this topic, you might want to have a listen as well.
So what we're going to be looking at in this segment today is the sports aspect of it, really, and the sports coverage aspect of it. So we'd like to know from you what you make of all of this. Naomi Osaka left the French Open to take care of her mental health, and that was specifically because she didn't want to participate in press conferences. What are your thoughts? You can call us 7733290, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up after this, we will be joined by Harish Deol, co-founder and editor of 2213. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It is 5:15. You're listening to The Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're talking about Naomi Osaka's exit from the French Open last week, specifically because she wanted to take care of her mental health and chose not to participate in post-match press conferences. So what are your thoughts on this? Do let us know. You can call 7733290, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Harish Deol, co-founder and editor of 2213. Harish, thank you for joining us today.
Hello.
So what is the value of these post-match press conferences? You know, what role do they play in the sports and broadcasting ecosystem?
Well, to be honest, if not for the post-match press conferences, I think media houses would not have anything else to report about. Because we live in an age and era where everything is pretty much live these days. So, in fact, some post-match press conferences are also aired live. But the difference is that I would like to believe that journalists will get better insights into the emotions of the players. You know, when you're there, you're facing the athlete, you can judge the athlete based on the facial expression, the body language. These are small yet meaningful factors that perhaps can add color to, you know, their content, whether it's an article or whether it's broadcasting via radio or television. And if the reporting is going to be strictly about the match and its results, look, if you're a fan, you'd already watch it. So why would you need to read it again? So yeah, to answer your question, these post-match press conferences remain vital in the whole ecosystem from the sports broadcasting to the viewers and readers' experience.
So if we look at Naomi Osaka and her refusal to participate in these post-match conferences, one of the arguments has always been, you know, an athlete who agrees to join the Open or participate in competitions has also implicitly agreed to participate in post-match press. Do you think this needs to be reconsidered or, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Okay, I don't want to go into depth first, yeah, into Naomi's case first. Let's talk about generally. Generally, these post-match press conferences provide journalists, you know, the additional information, as I mentioned earlier, required in perhaps disseminating information. And sometimes this, you know, I've been to some post-match press conferences which are actually more exciting than the matches themselves. Now, coming back to Naomi's case, yeah, she cited that she's got mental health, what you call challenges. I don't like to use the word issues because it's not an issue. It's actually a challenge. Now, how different would Naomi be if, let's say, for example, she had told the organizer that, look, I'm having a splitting headache and I can't meet the press. Or let's say, for example, I've pulled my hamstring and I can't meet the press. Why has she been penalized for being honest when she could just go like, no, I'm not in the mood, I can't meet the press, I'm tired, I'm this and that. There are so many excuses, but no, she didn't create an excuse. She actually told the truth. Now, this is where the organizers, event managers, they should actually look into this and not treat mental health lightly. It should be as serious as any other illness that you can see. I mean, you can also say that you have a headache and no one will know, correct?
Mm.
Yeah. So now, it's all about treating it seriously and taking it seriously. But the thing is that we don't see them taking her issue seriously, and that's the problem. Or her challenge, sorry, seriously. So, yeah.
And how much of this comes from the fact that sports personalities are, to a large extent, also treated like celebrities and therefore have that kind of expectation put on them? Is that fair?
You see, sports personalities are celebrated, yeah? And they have to be placed in tough situations at times because people want to know more about them. Having said that, the questions can't always be about the nice, sweet things in life. Yes, there will be, provoking questions. There'll be questions about, let's say, for example, in the context of sports, let's say, for example, there were a lot of errors made. Why? What was going through your mind? Were you focused? These are questions that I believe are relevant. But at the same time, journalists do have a responsibility. And let's say, for example, if you're reporting about sports, it should be about sports. The tactics, the gameplay, everything related to the match, or perhaps, your future take about your upcoming matches. There shouldn't be any form of gender bias element, or there shouldn't be any form of, non-sports related questions when, you're in a situation, because I'm speaking from experience. I've been in a press conference where we were all talking about the match and suddenly somebody goes like, oh, as a mother, how do you feel? I mean, why do you even need to say that?
Mm. And, the other thing that comes to mind is the fact that most athletes have social media now and therefore a direct line to millions of people. How does that change the role of the press and the press conferences?
Look, having direct line is, and this is not just about sports. I think it's across the board. Even politicians have direct line to everyone these days. It's like I said, you really have to look at how the role we journalists have to play now. Information is just available at everyone's fingertips. And, you just need to find the extra element. But in the pursuit of finding the extra element, it shouldn't be at the expense of the athlete, which if, let's say, for example, if it's sports, it should not be at the expense of an athlete when it comes to a non-sporting related factor, if you get what I mean. Mm. Let's say, for example, if the athlete is, had a massive breakup, for example, with his or her, partner, that's not a news item, unless, of course, it affects that athlete's performance and the athlete admits that, yes, it's affected. Now, that's a different thing altogether. But what happens off the court should not be implied, to happen on the court as well. So the line of questioning has to be as clear as possible.
Harish, with all this being the background, has your own role as a sports journalist shifted over the years?
Actually, no, to be honest. As for what I said earlier, I've maintained the fact that if it's sports related, it should just be sports. You shouldn't be distracted by all the other conversations that surround it. I really feel for women athletes. I just don't understand why they are placed under the microscope, and oftentimes for the not so right reasons. You'll be talking about how they manage their their, you know, work-life balance, you know, how they, it's like as though, and I feel insulted. It's like as though men are not supposed to have work-life balance, or men are not supposed to, you know, help out at home. You know, what I'm trying to say is that, you know, why is it often seen at a very gender? To me, for example, sports, if the only gender thing that should be mentioned in sports is if it's a woman competing against a woman, men competing against men. Badminton, for example. Men's double, women's double. That's the only gender element there. Otherwise, everything else, you treat the athlete as an athlete, regardless of his or her gender. So that's been my line of thought from day one.
And if we take a look at how things are locally, I mean, because the Naomi Osaka situation has really highlighted how things are on an international stage. But in Malaysia, what are the conversations surrounding mental health like between, you know, the athletes and the sports industry as a whole?
Well, you take 2213, for example, my publication, yeah? We've had sports psychologists from MindGap. I don't know if you've heard of them, but... they've been contributing their views and their take on mental health, especially among athletes, and they've been doing it for close to a year. So their narrative, their views, their literature has been published on our website, and through their views, through their articles, we've somehow sparked many conversations with certain stakeholders. Nevertheless, I admit that you know, more can always be done to spark more conversations about mental health.
And what would you say the relationship is like between the media and athletes here?
I would like to say it's cordial. That's how I would like to see it. I can't speak on behalf of the rest, but as far as I'm concerned, it's cordial and professional. Because I think I mean, it's at the end of the day, if you toe the line and you don't, you both parties know that there is a line, I think the line will be respected.
And I think another additional element here is what it means to be a national athlete, right?
Yes.
What additional pressures might an athlete face when they're seen as representing a country and not just themselves? You know, how does it affect their ability for them to speak up about themselves or the things that matter?
Oh, this was a question that was posed to me during my talk with New York University, like about 2 months back, you know, and, you know, to be honest, whatever 5 minutes I have left with you will not be enough to discuss about this. But yeah, I mean, look, athletes would use this or can use this as a platform to voice, whether they want to or not, it's a different thing altogether. To answer your question, because they are donning the national colors and they are seen as representing the country, perhaps in this region, you'd see the athletes being a little bit more polite. But let's say, for example, if you compare it to Europe or even US, the athletes actually use the international stage to voice whatever they need to voice, whether it's about a cause or a campaign or something of that sort. Yeah, should it be done or shouldn't it not be done? That's a debate because... when it comes to sports, you're supposed to be fair play. You're supposed to be apolitical. But as you and I know for a fact that there's no such thing as apolitical, even in sports, everyone takes a stand. And there's also this conversation, which I had sparked during my session with New York University. Why is it okay when an athlete voices out, but not when an official voices out? The same thing. It can be the same thing, but just because he or she is an athlete and he's voicing it out, whether it's right, whether it's wrong, but it's seen as okay. So who decides what is right and what is wrong? I think that's also another conversation for another day.
Harish, we just have about 30 seconds left. I was just wondering what you think is going to happen next. How might this conversation develop following Naomi's move?
I just hope that the conversation will keep on going, regardless of how it goes, how it develops. I just hope that the conversation with regards to mental health, it's not an issue. It's actually a challenge. It should be treated as the same as everything else, like a, you know, like any other health predicament. And yeah, I hope more conversations will be, regardless of whether you agree, you don't agree, but there needs to be conversations and we need to talk about this on a larger scale.
Harish, thanks for speaking with us today.
No worries.
That was Harish Deol, co-founder and editor of 2213, speaking to us about Naomi Osaka dropping out of the French Open last week, citing mental health challenges. So do share your thoughts with us on this. What do you make of all of this? What do you make of the response to her actions? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.